Thank you for listening to this condensed version of the number one New York Times best-selling author Dr. Mike Evans' new book, The End Times and Armageddon. Please visit endtimesbook.info to obtain your copy of the full version of the book. The full version includes even more insight, analysis, and breathtaking predictions of world events from Dr. Evans. Dr. Evans is a Nobel Peace Prize nominee and is the number one New York Times best-selling author of 112 published books. He is considered one of the world's foremost experts on Israel and the Middle East. Dr. Evans is the founder of the Friends of Zion Heritage Center and Museum in Jerusalem and the Ten Boom Museum in Holland. He is also the founder of the Jerusalem Prayer Team, with more than 77 million members with 30 million followers on Facebook alone. The Jerusalem Prayer Team provides critical humanitarian aid and support for God's chosen people around the world, including both in Israel and Ukraine. We hope you enjoy this presentation of the condensed version of The End Times and Armageddon by Dr. Mike Evans. Again, you can obtain a full version of the book at endtimesbook.info. Yesterday, let me tell you a story. On February 24th, 2022, the Russian army invaded Ukraine in a major escalation of the ongoing undeclared war between the two countries that began in 2014. Assured of easy victory by his intelligence services, Russian President Vladimir Putin was so confident that he had his frontline troops pack dress uniforms to wear in the victory parade following the inevitable fall of Kiev. Volodymyr Zelensky, the recently elected president of Ukraine, was expected to flee the invading Russian forces moving at blitzkrieg speed towards Kiev. Zelensky had assumed control of an entirely corrupt government, torn apart by various internal factions, and he was woefully unprepared to lead a nation in war with his background as a former comedian and actor. The invasion, however, did not go as planned for Putin's military. Ukrainians turned to guerrilla warfare and bedeviled the advancing Russian columns. Massive internal inefficiencies and failures within the Russian forces bogged down the attack. Zelensky also surprised Putin by refusing to flee. He used his media skills to mobilize the world through social media and video production to release a series of inspirational and effective statements to rally his own people and the Western world to Ukraine's support. Days turned into weeks, and weeks turned into months. Military equipment and humanitarian aid flowed into Ukraine. The resources were enough to keep Ukraine standing, though not enough to make significant advances against Putin's invading forces. Russian losses in soldiers and equipment mounted, and Putin began to face serious consequences as the weakness of his army was exposed before the world. The West responds. Finland and Sweden voted to join NATO soon after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Zelensky pushed for his nation to join the European Union. Russia's military plans began to unravel as the West continued to pour money, machinery, technical advice, intelligence, and other resources to support Ukraine's military and offer humanitarian assistance. Russia refused to fall back, instead sending huge infantry forces through the former Soviet Republic's mud and snow while massive artillery bombardments struck from a distance. Frustrated with his lack of progress, Putin mobilized 300,000 troops to bolster his ground forces in eastern Ukraine. Taken mostly from poor, isolated areas, his state security forces' tactics in snatching young men randomly off the street and sending them off to war remain largely unreported in Russian media. Putin gave orders to pulverize Ukraine from the air, throwing every artillery shell, missile, and drone he could scrape together. Many of his weapons missed their intended targets, leading to a number of civilian casualties. Russia's history with Ukraine. Few Americans care that Russia annexed Crimea in 2014, and even few knew it was part of Ukraine. Almost no one can pronounce the names of the towns where the war is being fought or could spell the names of locations like Bakhmut, Slavyansk, Lyman, or Kramatorsk. Ukraine was known as Soviet Ukraine, a republic of the Soviet Union from 1922 until 1991. The republic gained independence in 1991 as the Soviet Union dissolved and declared itself neutral. Ukraine was the third largest nuclear power in the world and held about one-third of the former Soviet Union's nuclear weapons, delivery systems, and significant means of its design, knowledge, and production. However, the Budapest Memorandum, signed on December 5, 1994, resulted in a multilateral agreement affirming Ukraine's security and sovereignty in exchange for giving up the nuclear stocks. The United States, under President Clinton, took credit for achieving it. The warheads were shipped intact to Russia, a procedure the United States insisted upon. A new constitution was adopted in 1996. A series of mass demonstrations known as the Euromaidan led to establishing a new government in 2014 after a revolution. Russia then unilaterally annexed Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula. Pro-Russian unrest culminated in a war in the Donbass between Russian-backed separatists and government forces in eastern Ukraine. This ongoing regional conflict was the background of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in February of 2022. Iran joins the fight. Ukrainian officials watched nervously as Russia turned air defense missiles into attack missiles and sent them into Ukraine en masse. Meanwhile, Iran mass-produced small, cheap Shahed 136 attack drones that cost a mere $20,000 apiece and sent them to Russia by the thousands. The Iranian drones were difficult to knock out of the sky. The only effective countermeasure was to fire expensive American air defense missiles provided in limited quantities to Ukraine. The estimated cost of knocking down each Iranian drone ran between $140,000 and $500,000 apiece. In addition, Ukraine is estimated to have lost more than 60 aircraft and Russia more than 70 aircraft. Belarus, closely tied to Russia, was happy to let Putin fire artillery attacks from inside its country, which was even closer to Kiev than most military bases inside Russia. Belarus also provided a convenient staging ground for the resupply operations and medevac trains. The scale of destruction on the ground in Ukraine was difficult to comprehend, as artillery attacks, numbering in hundreds of shells or drones at a time, rained down on Ukraine daily. Zelensky begged the West for the weaponry he needed to counter the incoming missiles, drones, and artillery barrages that steadily destroyed villages, towns, schools, hospitals, the water supply, dams, and Ukraine's power grid. The West sent billions of dollars in supplies, but not enough for Ukraine to push Russia out of its territory. It began to look like the West was content to fight a proxy war with Russia in Ukraine, using the Ukrainian army and its civilian population as cannon fodder. Russia appeared committed to fighting a long-term artillery battle in Ukraine, despite Western opposition. On March 14, 2023, the U.S. military confirmed that a Russian fighter jet collided with an American Reaper drone over the Black Sea, bringing the unmanned aerial vehicle, or UAV, down. The military said one of two Russian fighters clipped the drone's propeller, forcing the U.S. to bring it down in the area of intense NATO military activity close to Ukraine war front lines amid Russia's ongoing invasion of the country. Our MQ-9 aircraft was conducting routine operations in international airspace when it was intercepted and hit by a Russian aircraft, resulting in a crash and complete loss of the MQ-9. U.S. Air Force General James Heckler, who oversees the U.S. Air Force in the region, said in a statement. The Russia-Iran problem facing Israel. Russia and Iran grew closer and strengthened their political and ideological ties. The common interest included a desire for the demise of a democratic West with its decadent lifestyle, corrupt political systems, and morally bankrupt societies. What had been a relatively loose alliance in the past between Russia and Iran grew much. Russia began offering Iran support similar to its backing of Syria in the early 2000s, in return for the drones and artillery shells that Iran provided for Russia. Iran asked for the final pieces to complete its nuclear weapons development program to become a nuclear nation. Russia didn't immediately agree to provide this assistance, but soon offered the needed resources to help. Today, the nuclear question. Putin also considered using a nuclear weapon in Ukraine as the war stalled. He needed a dramatic move to force the Ukrainian people to surrender and bolster his flagging image as an invincible strongman. American intelligence sources began to warn that Iran had already made more enriched uranium than it needed for its nuclear energy program. According to the latest intelligence, Iran was only a matter of weeks away from being able to produce the materials it would need to make a nuclear weapon. Israeli leadership frantically considered how to defend itself against a nuclear Iran. None of the options were good ones. It was left pondering the least terrible outcomes of various possible responses to this existential threat. Worse, its warnings to the United States of a nuclear arms race in the Middle East fell on mostly deaf ears. The U.S. president and a majority of Congress were fully convinced Putin was a leader who needed to be defeated at any cost. They completely ignored the larger international implications of humiliating a cornered dictator with half the nuclear weapons of the world at his disposal. Putin was a demon-possessed madman whose delusion was that he was the savior of Orthodox Christianity and civilization. He believed that Russia's mortality and his own were one and the same. The head of the Orthodox Church in Russia anointed Putin as the chief exorcist to bring about the de-satanification of Ukraine and America, the Great Satan. Putin's move. As much as the Americans would have loved to have seen him go, either from rumored illness or from a coup d'etat inside the Russian government, neither happened. Putin was not on death's door as it was optimistically rumored, and furthermore, he was firmly in control of his government and his country. In fact, he held all of Russia in an iron fist. Putin made it clear he was prepared to wait for recession and famine to settle in across the world. Going into the war in early 2023, grain reserves stored around the world were tapped to feed many nations, as Ukraine missed most of its growing season that year, and Russia chose to hoard grain at home. In addition, the price of oil continued to be volatile. After the European Union imposed a price cap on what it was willing to pay for Russian oil, enough to pay for production but not enough to give any leftover profit to Putin to pay for his war, Putin cut off all oil shipments to Europe. As Putin ran low on artillery shells, weapons, and ammunition, he increasingly turned to Iran to provide him with the equipment he needed to continue his relentless attack on Ukraine. Iran was happy to oblige. The larger the debt Putin owed them, the less he would be able to turn down the payment they asked for in return. Iran's supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, another demon-possessed madman, and Putin were a marriage made in hell. Khamenei, a Twelver Shia believer, was convinced an apocalypse would usher in the Mahdi, the Islamic Messiah. As the one-year anniversary of the war approached, Zelensky was invited to speak to the United States Congress and made a press junket across Europe, rallying his allies to continue pouring aid into Ukraine. The United States and other Western nations proudly vowed to continue supporting Ukraine to the bitter end, and never to abandon their ally. The U.S. has provided $113 billion so far. The Russian Orthodox Church originated in Kiev. The country had been considered Orthodox since 988 when the bishops of Constantinople baptized the land, which was then ruled by the Kievan Rus. In 2022, cathedrals and monasteries were searched by Ukrainian intelligence, who reported that they eventually found evidence of collaboration between the bishops and priests and Russia's secret police. In 2023, Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, began stripping priests of the country of their citizenship, beginning in Kiev. Ukrainians usually celebrate Christmas on January 7th, as do the Russians, but the date was changed to celebrate it on December 25th in Ukraine to move Ukrainian churches sort of away from their alliance with the Russian Orthodox Church in light of the Archbishop of the Russian Orthodox Church Patriarch Kirill giving Vladimir Putin his blessing for the denazification of Ukraine and proclaiming him the chief exorcist. Russia has also increased its connections with China. President Xi Jinping of China met with Putin on March 20, 2023, to strengthen bilateral relations, regardless of the continued fighting in Ukraine. Xi made it clear that he remained committed to building a strong relationship with Russia as an invaluable partner in countering American global influence. Consolidating and developing Chinese-Russian relations is a strategic choice that China has made in the light of its own fundamental interests and the broad trends of global development, she said. The meeting provided a giant morale boost and a chance to showcase the much-vaunted New World Order that the Russian leader believes he is forging through his war on Ukraine, in which the U.S. and NATO can no longer dictate anything to anyone. Xi's visit to Russia brought together two leaders who have positioned themselves for life, setting a scene for global confrontation. China is increasingly willing to use its partnership with Moscow to counter Washington, even if that means granting approval to Putin's brutal destabilizing war. Israel's response. Notably absent from that group of nations flooding military aid into Ukraine was Israel. Not many people thought to ask why Israel was not uniting in World War III against Russia, particularly while Putin claimed to be denazifying Ukraine, which was led by a Jewish president. Israel gave massive humanitarian aid to Ukraine and also opened its nation to over 15,000 Ukrainian refugees, along with much more done covertly. But Israel realized a pogrom could easily happen in Russia, making life a living hell for its Jewish population. Russia also controlled the airspace in Syria and could shut the skies down at any time, keeping Israel from flying missions to attack Iran's arms shipments going into Lebanon. Iran had already shipped 250,000 missiles into Lebanon. Most importantly, Israel feared that the Russia-Ukraine war going badly for Putin could force him to grant Iran its atomic ambitions in exchange for missiles and drones, and to open another front complicating the West's ability in Ukraine. The future. The West continues supporting Ukraine. The West had a limited supply of high-tech, expensive air defense missiles to give to Ukraine. That disparity took its toll, and over time, the Ukrainians were unable to stop the ongoing barrage of artillery attacks. The Ukrainian people on the ground were left to hide in bomb shelters and carry on with life in an increasingly ruined landscape with little to no surviving infrastructure. Running water, flushing toilets, electricity, cell phone towers, they all became luxuries that few had access to. Some 15 million Ukrainians were displaced by the end of 2023, and that number and the flood of refugees into Europe only continued to grow. The strain on European economies was immense and contributed to recessions and shortages across the Western world as 2024 advanced. Meanwhile, the civilian death toll in Ukraine continued to climb alarmingly. Over 100,000 Ukrainian soldiers were either killed or wounded on the battlefield, while many more civilians died as a result of the incessant shelling, war crimes by the Russian army, and the privatizations and lack of medical care available on the ground. The entire nation of Ukraine was suffering from post-traumatic stress after a 9.5-year war with no end in sight. The West was forced to send massive military weapons to Ukraine to compensate for the exhaustion of its increasingly outnumbered and beleaguered Ukrainian army forces. Although Russia's forces vastly outnumbered Ukraine's, the West still had weapons and technology superior enough to Russia's to keep Ukraine in the fight, as long as Ukraine continued to have warm bodies to operate the West's excellent military equipment, it could continue to fight on. Ukrainians were making astonishing sacrifices, and they were astonishingly brave. As long as they were willing to keep fighting, the West was willing to keep arming them. Putin was able to sit back and continue to lob artillery shells without end at Ukraine, not putting much of his army at risk and managing to keep the Ukrainians pretty much on their heels as he finished literally leveling Ukraine. In his mind, time was his friend and the West's enemy. He was able to defeat the West in Syria by fighting a war in its 12th year with the support of Iran, thanks to General Qasem Soleimani, who forged an Iranian-Russian alliance in support of President Assad. The pressure on the West began to build. They were going to have to send not only the best of their weapons and a lot of them, but tanks and planes to prevent Ukraine from losing. Europe had stockpiled enough heating oil to get through the winter of 2023, but it did not have sufficient reserves left to see it through the winter of 2024. Putin's long game strategy of using food, oil, and refugees as weapons finally begin to bite. Recession, fuel and energy shortages, and famine struck on a global scale. More people in Africa died from famine because of food shortages in Ukraine than had died in the war with Russia. War fatigue sets in. Fatigue for the war built in the West. There wasn't enough food to go around. Prices were skyrocketing, fuel was scarce, and people began to ask if it was worth it, just to keep a completely destroyed Ukraine drawn on a map. Plus, a U.S. presidential election was taking place, and the election became a referendum on Ukraine. America was disgusted over the last two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The humiliation of the U.S. withdrawal in Afghanistan, in addition to the outcry that we needed to protect our border, not Ukraine's, pressured candidates into promising to stop supporting Ukraine if elected. With over $100 billion of taxpayer money given to the most corrupt country in Europe, it was not sitting well with U.S. taxpayers. Protecting Ukraine is not a vital national interest for the United States. While the U.S. has many national interests, securing our borders, addressing the crisis of readiness within our military, achieving energy, security, and independence, and checking the economic, cultural, and military power of the Chinese Communist Party, becoming further entangled in a territorial dispute between Ukraine and Russia is not one of them, according to some conservatives. Republicans said that the administration did not have a clear policy objective and a clear goal except to drag things out in Ukraine, and that the U.S. was giving Ukraine just enough to survive, but not to win. If we will not give Ukraine the weapons to win the war, why are we giving them the weapons to fight one? Research done by a Washington think tank was being used by the anti-Ukraine faction of the Republican Party. It said the slow pace of U.S. production means it will take us as much as 15 years at peacetime production levels and more than 8 years at wartime tempo to replace the stocks of major weapon systems such as guided missiles and drones if they were destroyed in battle or donated to Ukraine. Russia's desperation. Russia also paid a heavy price for continuing the war. The insufficiencies and corruption of its army meant that hundreds of thousands of Russian soldiers died or were seriously injured. Hundreds of thousands more men fled Russia to avoid the draft, and as the war dragged on, those refugee men began to settle abroad and give up on ever returning home to Russia. Russia considered the loss in Afghanistan a key reason for the collapse of the USSR. Tens of thousands of dead soldiers were never acknowledged. They were simply called black tulips, an omission that offended the Russian population and helped lead to the fall of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Army lost hundreds of aircraft and 2 million Afghan men, women, and children died in the war. Plus, Putin knew that the U.S.-funded Islamic jihadists spent billions in arms to defeat the Russians in Afghanistan, while at the same time the U.S. was orchestrating a massive arms race along with pushing the price of oil down, which would ultimately bankrupt the Soviet Union. Ronald Reagan did more than say tear down the wall. He actually tore it down. Putin believed his battle was a war between the West and Russia, World War III, and that America's goal was to wipe Russia off the map as it did the USSR. The Russian economy reverted to the most basic production, food, fuel, and materials for war. Quality of life in Russia plummeted. Although there was a deep disconnect among the population, the complete control exerted by Putin through his massive state security force held, and he maintained an iron grip on everyone and everything. However, Russian military generals and high-ranking government officials began to pressure Putin to stand up to America with its greatest weapons. They needed a decisive victory sooner rather than later if Russia was to emerge from the war with any capacity to rebuild itself into a global power. Frankly, all it had left that qualified it for that title were half the world's nuclear weapons. By every other measure, Russia had slipped out of world power status months ago. Iran's nuclear ambitions fulfilled. Meanwhile, Iran was feeling pressures of its own. Starting in the fall of 2022, widespread protests were taking place across Iran in response to excessive police brutality in the murder of a young woman, Mahsa Amini, who was arrested for the simple crime of showing too much hair. The Russians sent security specialists to Iran to teach the Iranian government how to suppress dissent and control the population more effectively. As a result, sports figures, celebrities, and outspoken activists were arrested by the hundreds, and some of them were publicly executed in an effective campaign to terrorize the population into settling down. The majority of regular Iranian people did not support their religiously controlled government's extreme stance, nor its fanatical belief in the coming of a Mahdi, a messianic figure who would come at the end of times, to usher in a golden age of Islam just before the end of the world. But there was nothing they could do about it since the mullahs ran the country. The Iranian regime, bolstered by support from Putin, refused to continue negotiating for any sort of return to the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear arms deal of 2015 that prohibited it from developing nuclear weapons and which the U.S. withdrew from in 2018, ultimately collapsing. Iran already had enough enriched uranium stockpiled to create at least a dozen nuclear bombs. It ordered its 4,000 accelerated advanced centrifuges, nearly double the number it had at the beginning of the Ukraine-Russian war, to spin up to maximum capacity, working to produce enriched uranium in the shortest amount of time. It fed uranium enriched up to 60% U-235 into all the cascades at its fuel enrichment plant. It took Iran less than 1 week to accomplish the necessary enrichment work, for each bomb it planned to build. For each week, Ukraine survived, and the Russia-Ukraine war dragged on, propped up entirely by the West at this point. Iran made enough weapons-grade uranium for another nuclear weapon. Israel waited and watched nervously as Russia began to discuss more openly the idea of providing Iran with the resources to not only build nuclear weapons, but provide the missiles to deliver them. In the spring of 2023, a deal was reached between Russia and Iran to buy Su-35 and F-35 fighter jets. Iran already had enough enriched uranium stockpiled to create at least a dozen nuclear bombs. It ordered its 4,000 accelerated advanced centrifuges, nearly double the number it had at the beginning of the Ukraine-Russian war, to spin up to maximum capacity, working to produce enriched uranium in the shortest amount of time. It fed uranium enriched up to 60% U-235 into all the cascades at its fuel enrichment plant. It took Iran less than 1 week to accomplish the necessary enrichment work for each bomb it planned to build. For each week, Ukraine survived, and the Russia-Ukraine war dragged on, propped up entirely by the West at this point. Iran made enough weapons-grade uranium for another nuclear weapon. Israel waited and watched nervously as Russia began to discuss more openly the idea of providing Iran with the resources to not only build nuclear weapons, but provide the missiles to deliver them. In the spring of 2023, a deal was reached between Russia and Iran to buy Su-35 and F-35 fighter jets. U.S. intelligence leaked a secret deal between the Chinese and Saudi Arabia, in which the Chinese negotiated a peace deal between Iran and Saudi Arabia in exchange for China guaranteeing Saudi Arabia a nuclear reactor if evidence proved that Iran was going nuclear. In recent years, China has helped Saudi Arabia build its own ballistic missiles, consulted on a nuclear program, and begun investing in Prince Mohammed's projects such as NEOM, a futuristic new city. China has also pitched to Saudi officials on setting up a local defense manufacturing industry, while Russia has signed a nuclear cooperation deal with the kingdom. China also began to sell Russia its Mujin 5 drones manufactured by Mujin Limited, a Chinese company based in Xiamen on the east coast of China. Why does China support Russia's war in Ukraine? Because it weakens America's military arsenal. If a nuclear war happened between Russia and the European Union with the U.S., China would be the only one standing and would rule the world. The point of no return. The president called for a meeting with America's leading military contractors, dubbed the Last Supper. The purpose of the meeting was to inform them of the massive weaponry that the U.S. would require, the looming threat of a Chinese invasion of Taiwan, and the need to prepare for a potential war with China. During the meeting, the Last Supper group informed the president that in the event of a large-scale war with China, the United States would run out of long-range anti-ship missiles within a week. They explained that due to the depletion of resources during the Ukraine war, key components such as artillery shells, missiles, air defense systems, counter-artillery radar, Javelin missiles, SM-6 missiles, unmanned aerial vehicles, cruise missiles, Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, and ball bearings were all exhausted. As an example, the United States has given up over one-third of its Javelin missile inventory to Ukraine. Surprisingly, one arms package included 1,000 Javelin missiles despite the low inventory. The current production rate is about 1,000 per year. The group further clarified that the U.S. had given 7,500 HIMAR launchers to Ukraine in the first year and 10,000 in the second year, leaving the U.S. in no position to provide Taiwan with the necessary weaponry or even defend the country adequately. The group concluded that under no circumstances would the U.S. be able to defeat China if a large-scale war broke out over the Taiwan crisis due to the depletion of U.S. firearms and resources in Ukraine. Then, American intelligence sources confirmed a sighting made by the Mossad that the crates of equipment and parts had been loaded on a cargo ship in the Russian port of Astrakhan, where the mighty Volga River empties into the Caspian Sea and the site of Russia's largest Caspian Sea port. The ship set sail across the Caspian Sea, bound for the port of Anzali, Iran's largest Caspian Sea port. The crossing would take 4, maybe 5 days. When that ship arrived, the time it would take for Iran to become a nuclear power would go from weeks to days. Russia possessed a total of 5,977 nuclear warheads, the largest stockpile in the world, along with the world's largest arsenal of ballistic missiles. All of Iran's dreams were about to come true. And then Putin dropped a low-yield nuclear weapon on Zelensky's hometown of Kryvyi Rih in south-central Ukraine. It was a warning shot across the bow to Zelensky and the West that Putin was prepared to do whatever it took to win the war at all costs. The world, while horrified, was not prepared to launch retaliatory nuclear strikes against Russia and risk provoking the end of the world with a free-for-all nuclear exchange between Russia and the West. In light of the seriousness of the attack and the thermal radiation winds, the nuclear attack provoked an instant response from NATO announcing that Article 5 had been invoked. Article 5 says that an attack on one is an attack on all NATO members. The U.S. president was informed that a nuclear war between the United States and Russia would plunge the earth into a nuclear winter within days due to the level of smoke and soot released into the atmosphere, which would ultimately mean the death of one-third of humanity. Then the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared to sound them. The first angel sounded his trumpet, and there came hail and fire mixed with blood, and it was hurled down on the earth. A third of the earth was burned up, a third of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. The second angel sounded his trumpet, and something like a huge mountain, all ablaze, was thrown into the sea. A third of the sea turned into blood, a third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. The third angel sounded his trumpet, and a great star, blazing like a torch, fell from the sky on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. The name of the star is Wormwood. A third of the waters turned bitter, and many people died from the waters that had become bitter. The fourth angel sounded his trumpet, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon and a third of the stars, so that a third of them turned dark. A third of the day was without light, and also a third of the night. As I watched, I heard an eagle that was flying in midair call out in a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, because of the trumpet blasts about to be sounded by the other three angels." Revelation chapter 8, verse 6 through 13. And the four angels who had been kept ready for this very hour and day and month and year were released to kill a third of mankind. A third of mankind was killed by the three plagues of fire, smoke, and sulfur that came out of their mouths. Revelation chapter 9, verse 15 and 18. China, calculating that a window of opportunity was available to invade Taiwan, launched a massive conventional preemptive strike on the island nation and seized it almost overnight. The Chinese watched and waited until the U.S. weapon supply was dangerously low. Iran announced that it was a nuclear state, and all the Sunni oil-rich nations in the Gulf region announced an urgent nuclear arms race of their own. In just a few years, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates would obtain nuclear arsenals of their own. As enemies of Iran, only the Persian Gulf would separate them, a less than 1 hour missile flight. The Samson option. Israel realized that Russia had acquiesced to Iran's insistent requests for nuclear weaponization help. Russia decided not only to share information and technicians on how to build a miniaturized nuclear warhead that would fit on an IRBM, an intermediate-range ballistic missile, but it also shared information, tools, and technical instruction on how to build MRVs, multiple reentry vehicles, where up to three warheads with three separate targets could be mounted on a single ballistic missile delivery system. In the days before the 1967 Six-Day War, Israel planned to insert a team of paratroopers by helicopter into the Sinai. Their mission was to set up and remotely detonate a nuclear bomb on a mountaintop as a warning to belligerent surrounding states. The greatly outnumbered Jewish state, in a surprising turn of events, effectively eliminated the Egyptian Air Force and occupied the Sinai, winning the war before the test could even be set up. Retired Israeli Brigadier General Itzhak Yaakov referred to this operation as the Israeli Samson option. In the 1973 Yom Kippur War, Arab forces were overwhelming Israeli forces, and Prime Minister Golda Meir authorized a nuclear alert and ordered 13 atomic bombs to be readied for use by missiles and aircraft. The Israeli ambassador warned President Nixon of very serious conclusions if the United States did not airlift supplies. Nixon complied. This is seen by some commentators on the subject as the first threat of the use of the Samson option. Iran realized that with the introduction of missiles and silos on Iranian soil and the completion of its nuclear development program, it was opening itself to a preemptive strike of some kind from Israel. It would not be enough for Iran simply to have nuclear weapons. It would also need some sort of umbrella of protection for itself. And Russia could also provide that protective umbrella over Iranian airspace. Israel has for many years had one of the best equipped and best trained air forces in the world. Iran could never hope to match Israel in either quality or quantity of airplanes, top-notch pilots, or air defense systems. But with Russia's help, it didn't have to. If it went atomic and had Russian planes controlling its airspace. If Russia was willing to put its own airplanes in the skies over Iran, both Russia and Iran could dare Israel to shoot those planes down and risk massive retaliation. It wouldn't even have to be nuclear retaliation. Israel realized Iran would be momentarily protected by a nuclear umbrella, as it were. Possession of nuclear weapons would prevent Iran from any future attacks against it. Iran's Operation Mahdi. Iran, not satisfied to destroy the little Satan Israel, decided to position itself to attack the great Satan, the United States, as well. Iran launched Operation Mahdi, and hundreds of lead-lined containers were shipped filled with chemical and biological weapons through LLC, less than container load. When cargo shipped by sea are not enough to fill a container, buyers often opt to share container space with other shippers. But for Iran, the plan was to ship in from 26 countries so the U.S. could not detect them. They were all lead-lined, being shipped to major U.S. cities to be detonated in simultaneous attacks. 100 jihadist suicide bombers carried backpacks weighing 80 to 100 pounds. In them were suitcase nuclear bombs. Each bomb contained 1 kiloton, equivalent to 1,000 tons of TNT. One device in Washington, D.C. would destroy everything within a half mile of the Capitol. Within hours, the prevailing winds would carry the nuclear fallout throughout Washington. The Nuclear Threat Initiative, NTI, published a report in September of 1997 that quoted the Russian National Security Advisor Alexander Lebed, who claimed that the Russian military lost track of upwards of 100 nuclear suitcase bombs. These sleeper cells, made up of kamikaze Iranian Revolutionary Guards, were given instructions to attack the government, culture, unsuspecting citizens, cause mayhem, and destroy the United States from within. For decades before and after the fall of Iraq, Iran funded and infiltrated Shiite assets all over the Middle East, ready and waiting for the order to attack America, the Great Satan, and Israel, the Little Satan, from inside and from without. Iran attacked Israel through its proxies, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Mahdi Army, Hezbollah, and others. Although Israel's air defense system, Iron Dome, was able to stop about 90% of incoming rockets or missiles, there came a point when sheer numbers of incoming projectiles would overwhelm the system. Israel urgently worked to upgrade its Iron Dome defense system with an iron beam, a directed energy fiber laser system that knocked down airborne targets, but it would take time to operationally deploy the system. Aware that quantity was the only way to overwhelm the quality of Israeli air defense systems, Hezbollah, an Iranian proxy in Lebanon, stocked up on as many as 300,000 Iranian rockets and small missiles, which Iran was delighted to provide. Syria, another Iranian proxy, launched its planes with bombs with zero warning time towards Israel. Israel stares at an apocalypse. Israel was staring an apocalypse in the face. A nuclear Iran, with its skies aggressively protected by Russia under a nuclear umbrella, was on the horizon. Israel, which had excellent intelligence assets throughout the Gulf region, caught wind of the Iranians' preparation for war. The 24 Su-35 Flanker fighter jets that Iran purchased from Russia when the U.S. blocked their sale to Egypt were delivered along with the 60 fully operational Iranian pilots the Russians had trained. While the Israeli Air Force could make short work of the Su-35s and their inexperienced pilots, doing so would undoubtedly provoke Russia. Israel faced a stark choice. On the one hand, Iran was nuclear, and an atomic arms race in the Middle East had begun. A nuclear strike on Israel would allow religious leaders in Iran to create an apocalypse that they believed would usher in their Messiah. Furthermore, the Iranians' religious beliefs stated that the Islamic Armageddon would include the destruction of Israel. On the other hand, Israel could not risk a preemptive strike against Iran failing. If Israel, a tiny nation the size of New Jersey, took a retaliatory strike from Iran, it would be wiped out with a single nuclear weapon. If a preemptive Israeli strike wasn't 100% successful, it had no guarantee that Iran would not be able to hit Israel with an atomic bomb. Israel's only option for surviving was to wipe out Iran and its plan for an apocalypse that would summon the Islamic Messiah, the Mahdi. The only way to eradicate Iran's obsession would be the Samson option. Israel's deterrent strategy of massive retaliation with nuclear weapons before Russian planes began protecting Iranian airspace. The name is a reference to the biblical Israelite Samson who pushed down the pillars of the Philistine temple to destroy his enemies. 16 to 20 million people would die in the initial nuclear strikes. Millions more could be expected to die slower, agonizing deaths by radiation poisoning afterwards. Given the level of radiation that would come from a modern, high-yield, all-out nuclear strike, very few medical personnel and aid from other nations would be able to enter Iran to provide humanitarian assistance. It was a terrible thing to contemplate, and Israel's senior leadership prayed fervently for some other alternative to present itself. The doomsday clock was now 7 seconds to midnight. God created the world in 7 days. Either Iran's world would end in 7 days, or Israel's. Israel's time to make a decision was up. It was now or never to take action to save itself. 80 nuclear warheads would be launched. The Israeli Air Force planes were in the skies. F-151 and F-161s with atomic bombs, along with Jericho 2 and 3 ballistic missiles, along with submarine-launched nuclear-capable cruise missiles. The end times had arrived, and the final countdown to Armageddon had begun. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this condensed version of the number one New York Times best-selling author Dr. Mike Evans' new book, The End Times and Armageddon. Please visit endtimesbook.info to obtain your copy of the full version of the book. The full version includes even more insight, analysis, and breathtaking predictions of the course of the world events from Dr. Evans. Dr. Evans is a Nobel Peace Prize nominee and is the number one New York Times best-selling author of 112 published books. He is considered one of the world's foremost experts on Israel and the Middle East. Dr. Evans is the founder of the Friends of Zion Heritage Center and Museum in Jerusalem and the Ten Boom Museum in Holland. He is also the founder of the Jerusalem Prayer Team with more than 77 million members with 30 million followers on Facebook alone. The Jerusalem Prayer Team provides critical humanitarian aid and support for God's chosen people around the world, including both in Israel and Ukraine. We hope you've enjoyed the presentation of this condensed version of The End Times and Armageddon by Dr. Mike Evans. Again, please visit endtimesbook.info to obtain your full version of the book.